Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Shelley.
August 5, 2022, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. And this is the show you were looking for because you're hearing me say this. Anyway, we are live on a Friar's Day just after, and about 5 minutes after, I went late to air. 5 minutes after 8 p.m. Eastern Time, okay, on that August 5th date. And that means you can call in. Any other time, though, hey, it's recorded and you're hearing it later. So unless it's August 5th, just after 8 p.m. Eastern, the show is not live. Got it? Okay. But if you want to join it live, 319-527-5016 is the number to call. 319-527-5016. And I got a couple things to report about why it is I cut the show short last night. And what happened at the end of Jack Blood's show, a couple other things yesterday, and I still haven't released the podcast. They're almost ready to be released, but they'll be out tonight late, and maybe we'll get this show out late tonight too if I can stay awake long enough. But we'll see how it goes. I have a whole show from Wednesday with Amir, which is ready to be released, but I just couldn't get it out by airtime today. That's from Wednesday. We didn't do a show on Tuesday because the mighty Christy Aphrodite cut the tip of her finger off just before showtime, so she was not feeling quite up to coming to the mic, although she might have, and she didn't, but she's healing as per usual, and now she can show you in real time how she heals some of her own injuries. Anyway, that was the joke from last night, and she called in to the Jack Blood show last night, but anyway, enough of all that. We're on to today and what you might want to talk about, which could be anything. 319-527-5016 is the number to call. We're in the 30-minute format, so we're going to take breaks at the 30-minute marks now. I think that's going to work out better. And we'll see. If it doesn't, we'll go back to the one-hour format. Anyway, enough out of me. Oh, you can reach out to me, Charles.Ocelli on Skype. And if you send me a message, I can call you into the show. But that's only if you send me a message and only if you're hearing us live. Now, almost 8 minutes past 8 p.m. Eastern in the United States at this time on August 5th. Anyway, that's all there is to it. How is it for you, my co-host B. Pete? How you doing, man?
Oh, doing pretty good. Thank God it's Friday.
I suppose. I don't know. I don't know if we need to thank God it's Friday anymore, but that used to be a thing. That's like a... I don't know. Was that a 1970s thing, or was that like an older generation thing where they would say, thank God it's Friday because the end of the work week? I'm not sure. Do you recall?
It's older than... Wasn't there a disco song, thank God it's Friday?
Yeah, of course. But, I mean, there was disco songs for all kinds of things, you know, that...
It was a common expression before that, but It really caught on when they came out with the song.
So I guess it got really super popular in the 70s, partially due to the song, but probably pre-existed that.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't even know when we went to the, generally people are off on the weekends. That sort of disappeared real fast. I mean, it seems to me as soon as we turned the calendar to 1980, that was over. It was just me, but...
You really lost track of when it was Friday. I was asking, when you work 7 days, you know, when you work 6 days a week, which way is hump day? Because your hump becomes 2 days wide.
Well, either your hump is 2 days wide or you look at it as it's not actually the day of work. It's that day of rest becomes your hump day, the day in between the two work days. See, I don't know. I ended up with 84-hour work weeks and all kinds of stuff when I was working steadily. in the outside world. That was impossible. The 84-hour work week, and I've had people go, well, how did you even do that? 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's 84, my friends. Okay. And where's your hump day then? I guess it's that middle day, right? So you've got 30 hours on each side of that 12-hour day, and that makes up... Oh, no, wait, that's not right either. 84, so you got 72 hours to divide up between two. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The middle of the week is the middle of the week, right?
Pretty much, pretty much.
Yep.
Although we slacked off some here the past couple of days. It's been so hot. Contractors trying to start early in the morning can finish by about 3. A lot of days it doesn't happen. Some days it does. They've had equipment breakdown. So today was actually the first afternoon I've had off in 3 months, I think.
Mm. Well, you still
haven't taken a whole.
Used to crack me up working outside because people would think, oh, well, it must be a lot easier because a lot of other things stop when you do certain kinds of work, you know? And again, I point to a long time I spent with gas stations and convenience stores. Those places don't close. So, you know, yeah, there's 3 feet of snow outside. It's an emergency. Yeah, well, they keep the gas stations open, too. Because your emergency vehicles need to get fuel from somewhere, and not all of them have a private place. So guess what?
There was
yes,
and I can't remember who it was, whether it was Denny's or some other business,
mm-hmm.
that when they built new stores, they never put a front door lock in them because they were always open 24/7.
Yep.
I can't remember which one it was. It was Denny's or some other business like that, that when they built their new stores, they never put a lock on the front door because it was always open.
Well, you know, it's some dumbass contractor who said, hey, look, we can save like $12, you know, per building, because they would build these, usually it's a prefabricated building, you know, for businesses like that. Like, why do all the buildings look alike? Because one company designs and builds them, and they get the contract, and then somebody said, hey, we can save $12 per unit if we don't put a lock in it. I mean, they never close. And a place that thinks like that never questions it, right? But they had to learn that lesson the hard way. Again, I worked in some businesses where they had to transition. Like, what do you do when you actually close? Because, you know, we had the 24-hour thing. And
Waffle House went through down here. They built a lot of new Waffle Houses in these smaller towns, and then Hurricane hit. But come to out, Waffle House was one of the few places that you could get food because they didn't shut down. I mean, they still had gas. They'd put flashlights and lanterns up to see what they were doing and cook with, you know, gas wasn't out. They'd keep right on cooking.
Yeah, why not?
One of the few rescue workers and that could go and get something to eat because they knew that somebody would be there.
Yeah. Even a weird thing, like, see, hurricanes, again, will show you, they'll reveal certain things. People do end up having to lock their doors because their power's out or whatever. And so, especially today, with everything being electronic, how do you even make a transaction without a computer, without power, right? So, nobody even thinks about that kind of thing. And some of them have battery backups, but they don't last that long. And, you know, not every 7-Eleven or... whatever convenience store you can think of, Circle K, doesn't matter. Not every one of them has a battery backup or workers who would understand how to say, you know, do a transaction on paper anyway, right? That's assuming you had cash.
FEMA still uses the Waffle House Index when they start rating when they assess natural disasters.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of funny. They... trying to find out exactly their definition of it. It's an informal measure of a storm severity and its effect on a stricken community, whether the Waffle House has to close or not.
Yeah. Well, see, and I'll tell you, during Hurricane Sandy, you know, the superstorm, I was actually at that moment working with a 7-Eleven that was in an odd position because almost everything else in town didn't have power. And for many towns around, but there was like one strip in the grid that did survive and have power. So you could literally trace this. It was like it went along a narrow path down a certain block that like went through a couple of towns where there was just this one area where power could be available. And it just so happened that the 7-Eleven was still working. Every other kind of like food store or whatever had to shut down because their refrigeration went down, their ability to make transactions went down, right? And yeah. People that had power out in their homes and everything, it was a mad dash to get over to the 7-Eleven to get coffee and things. Because, you know, you couldn't make coffee at home, a lot of these people, they had electric burners. So, No coffee. You couldn't make hot food of any kind. And another thing was like bags of ice and stuff, right? No refrigeration. Even the Walmart that's got the best, you know, stockpile of everything. What were they to do? They couldn't just, they tried shutting down part of the store that, you know, required power and seeing if they could, like, leave open some of the dry and canned goods. But then you run into the problem of who's got cash, right? And it's like, oh, I'll just go to the ATM. Yeah, problem is if your banks don't have power in the area either, then ATMs your don't ATMs work. Don't work. The businesses that have ATMs, they don't work. So how are you going to get cash? So this is what happened there, yeah.
Oh, this is the history of the Waffle House Index. It says that Craig Fugate, who was the FEMA director or administrator, coined the term shortly after the Joplin tornado of May 2011. The massive tornado devastated the town, caused $2.8 billion worth of damage. It killed 158 people, injured roughly 1,150 others. Mm. Both of the Waffle Houses in Joplin, however, remained open. So other corporations has taken the Waffle House and their procedures when it's a natural disaster.
Right.
They have a limited menu that they use in times of food shortages and power outages, mm-hmm. and have jump teams who can quickly reopen a restaurant after a disaster as soon as it's safe to do so. It says other franchises such as Lowe's, Walmart, and Home Depot have similar policies, so they've all modeled it after the Waffle House.
Right, but this has to be post-Hurricane Sandy because, as I said, in New Jersey, I watched Walmarts just shut. They just shuttered everything, which was unusual for them because they at that time, had the 24-hour model almost everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
So instantaneously, you know, in a place like Jersey, you go from the 24-hour availability of products and everything to nothing, which threw a lot of people off. Another thing is people were angry they couldn't get gas. You know, okay, so I'll just get out of the area, right? Yeah, but how much gas can you buy in the area to even make your trip? most of the gas stations, you can't pump fuel without it. Now, I had worked in the industry where, you know, there was a time when almost every gas station had what would you call that? Just like like you could hand crank gas out of the ground, right? And we had these machines that you could do that, and it would actually run it through the pump the same way and whatever, but it actually required somebody to, you know, actually crank the thing, and you could crank the gas out of the ground. But otherwise, you could have, you know, 10,000 gallons of gas and nobody can get to it. So how far can you get out of the area? How much gasoline do you have to begin with? And then you got to take a look at how extensive the area is that you're still going to find this, right? You got to get back to an area where there's power again. Whole weird thing went on there with that, as I described several times piecemeal on this show. But, yeah, so I'm just imagining that that's the kind of thing that's gone on, and they've had to adjust based on learning from those situations. But I'm very familiar with having the only store open, you know, in a 100-mile radius, or maybe a 50-mile radius. And, you know, hey, look, I've got hot food. I've got hot coffee. We couldn't make 5-gallon jugs of coffee fast enough to even keep up with the people that were, you know, jamming the place. And we're talking 1-7-Eleven. You know, and like literally I had to have somebody stand behind me while I was at the coffee counter, which usually had plenty of space. People were so like just piled up behind me. And, you know, everybody's yelling, give me that first. Come on, give me that. I need decaf. Come on, give me. I don't care what flavor it is. You know, like madhouse happened with this. Once people realized everything was knocked out, you know, they sit home for a day or two with their candles. And then when they venture out, they find that it's like that. It becomes another thing. And as far as service, I know that there was a couple of food trucks that, you know, sold out everything they had really, really fast, again, for the people that had cash on them, you know. And some people say, well, you can still make transactions with cell phones, and you could probably... No, problem is, if the power's really out like that, if the grid's really down, yeah, your cell phone towers don't work either. So, you know, yeah. Anyways, I don't even know why I went on to this. Oh, because you said Waffle House Index and natural disasters. That's why. But it is a thing. It is a thing. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying it was my fault. You know, it's something we see common down here. I mean, every year we have hurricane season. So you usually hear about it when we have one come ashore and does any least little bit of flooding or damage.
Well, and because of the evolution and the changes in the way business is transacted, you indeed have to learn new things. I mean, look, there was a point at which credit card business or debit card business would have been nothing to lose. It would have been like, it's a little bite out of the business, you know, but most people had cash. That's not the case anymore. You know, and that kind of happened over time. We've discussed that before. But then it puts you in a more vulnerable position when indeed the grid or the internet goes down, or because remember what happened when just like Google decided to crash a couple of years ago? That messed up people who were using the Google Pay and Google Maps and everything. Like they didn't know what to do just because Google just took a nap. Like what was it, for a day, I think, altogether, like no Gmail work, nothing. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
People were panicking.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
every time Facebook goes down for more than an hour, people go nuts.
Yeah, but you'd think, you know, Facebook, it's not going to stop you from grocery shopping. It just, you know, oh, my God, the people that live on Facebook are, you know, oh, no, I have to deal with the real world for an hour. But, I mean, you know, when you're talking about Google or something that's, like, all-encompassing now, that's interactive in, like, so many different aspects of your life, whether you realize it or not, like I said, the Google Maps goes down. So you go to use your, you know, your, what do you call it, GPS app, try and find directions somewhere, because nobody does the old thing of, like, stopping and asking for directions, or I don't even know people that have maps anymore, really, except probably you have some maps, BP. I would think that you would be smart enough to have the backup, right, of the paper in case, you know, nothing electronic works. But,
yeah, I still use them. It's very seldom I use GPS for something. I just hate giving up the data while I'm driving down the road. If it's somewhere that I've never been before, I might pop out the GPS, you know, an hour before I get there just to see where I'm going. But other than that, no, I'm a map fanatic.
No, I got you, and I'd rather have the map. But, you know, people would argue that, hey, the GPS gives you a more updated version and all that, but... Much like phone numbers, where I used to have, you know, 30, 40 phone numbers at least in my head at a time that I could dial from anywhere. Today, I don't remember hardly anybody's phone number off the top of my head.
Really? You know, that's the hardest for me because we've got, I don't know, maybe 120 people connected with this job. I've had to load them all in my phone so that... Right. You know, I know whether to answer the phone or not because somebody's calling me or something, you know, 5 miles down the road. But it's, I don't remember anybody's phone number anymore. I don't even know my, it's, I know my cell number only because you use it for this double authentication now with a lot of Microsoft products where they have to send a text to your phone. But other than that, hell, I couldn't even tell you my own phone number.
Well, even when I had a cell phone, I couldn't tell you my phone number, but... I think the reason why I'm bringing this up is because much like GPS has made it so that people don't actually remember directions, because they don't now. Again, you're probably an exception to this, BP, but think about it. If all they do is wait for the phone to tell them turn left here, turn right there, they don't have to think about it. They don't commit it to memory, right? So it's not like, gee, I just know how to get someplace. No, you don't.
Remember some landmarks the next time they go. Maybe.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is they're not watching landmarks anymore. They're just driving and listening for the cue. Turn here, do this. You know, in 3 miles, you know, make a slight left or whatever. They're no longer having to think about it, map it out, what's my next turn, none of that, like they used to. And I think it's the same thing like with phone numbers, because you're not actually dialing it. You don't commit it to memory. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So... I don't know. It's just one of the evolutionary things that's gone on. That's all.
Then you have the exact opposite. You have towns that are so confusing when it comes to the layout of their streets. Hickory was one of these places. They've broken everything down into quadrants within the city.
Right.
So if a street falls in that quadrant, it might be First Street Northeast, but then you'd have a First Street Northwest,
mm-hmm.
and First Street Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
Then you'd have First Street Avenue Northeast, Southeast. Then a First Street Avenue Place. It was the most confusing guy. I asked somebody with UPS one time, I said, how do you deliver things in this town? He says, if it wasn't for GPS, he says, I'd lose my job.
Yeah.
You just can't remember when you've got 20 some odd First Avenues or mm-hmm. First Streets. It's like, well, I'll give you an example. 10th Avenue. You got 10th Avenue Place Northeast, 10th Avenue Court Northeast, 10th Avenue Drive Northeast, 10th Avenue Drive Northwest, 10th Avenue Drive Southeast, 10th Avenue Drive Southwest, 10th Avenue Lane, 10th Avenue, 10th Drive, 10th Street Boulevard, 10th Street Circle, 10th Street Court, 10th Street Drive, 10th Street Lane, 10th Street, and then your four quadrants. It's, I mean, when you've got... Mm. some odd 10th streets in one town, how does anybody get around?
I'll tell you what it does is it makes me really laugh thinking back to the days when people would complain about New York City because it was 2nd Street or 2nd Avenue, and a lot of the northeastern cities are laid out like that where you have avenues or streets, and usually the avenues will run, you know, either west to east or east to west, and the streets will run, you know, say north to south, and that's how you can reason out almost anything, right?
But yeah, most towns use a little bit of thought process in laying something like that out.
Yeah, but with this madness, now forget it.
You got 13 First Avenues and you've got 14 First Streets.
Mm-hmm.
So,
so it's not like,
good Lord.
Yeah, it's not like
the same thing. 13 to 14 of each individual street before you start getting into the names.
Fair enough.
And that's the funny thing. Like First Avenue might go 5 blocks in the northeast quadrant and stop, but it may pick up in the northwest quadrant and run for another 10 blocks.
Right.
I mean, it's when we moved there, I called Duke Power to hook up our. To get our power hooked up in our name.
Right.
And I called the lady. She says, well, our office is downtown. You have to come down and fill out the application. Then we run your credit. If credit's not good enough, we have you put down a deposit, and then we can have you on within a day. I said, okay, no problem. I said, well, can you give me directions? I'm new in town. She says, well, I can't tell you the street names, but I can tell you the buildings you need to turn at. I mean, that's how bad it was.
Mm. That's just crazy. Well, anyway, look, we got a we got a caller, and I want to get to him because we got about 7 minutes left in this segment, if you will. So I want to get to him, give him a chance to at least wet his teeth on this Friday night show, because it is the legendary Jimmy James, who has the fan club and all that. Now, we haven't gotten an update on the fan club in a little bit, I think, but Jimmy James is live with us, and hopefully we don't have too much feedback. You can be live with us. 319-527-5016 is the number to call. And I do hear we got a little bit of feedback, Jimmy James, but not a ton. But what's on your mind tonight, man?
Can't be.
Well, can't be or not. I hear it. Oh. I don't know if everybody else does. But it's anyway, what's on your mind, brother? Go ahead. Let's move forward.
Yes, we must move forward. We must. We have to.
Hmm.
What choice do we have?
All true. Can't move backwards anyway. There's
if
no
we
time
can move
machine.
Backwards?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I've made
that we know of.
Suspended animation for great lengths of time.
Well, but see, even that would be a way to move forward, right? Because if you're in suspended animation, when you reemerge from suspended animation, you have moved forward.
I don't know. Sometimes I play a week catching playing catch up.
Well, there's always that. Now, it playing catch up, though.
Well, you go into suspended animation.
Mm. Okay, we could go in this direction tonight, Jimmy James. Is that what your intent is? You want to talk about suspended animation and how time moves?
That's exactly the topic I had in mind when I called.
All right.
Suspended animation.
Cool. So go ahead, lead on, Jimmy James.
Well, as you know, I've been working on it using my Tesla files that I procured when I was in the former Yugoslavia.
I see.
We've almost got it done, Chuck. Really? Almost done.
Well, you better be careful, Jimmy James, because that's the kind of thing that they will assassinate somebody for if they unlock that secret and plan to share it with, I don't know, others.
Ha! Too bad for them. I've already gone back and covered my back.
All right. Thinking many chess moves ahead and backwards, the great Jimmy James. I appreciate it, man. I can't even compete with that sort of mindset. So, beautiful thing. You want to tell us a little bit about your progress?
You should see my new ray gun.
All right.
You should see my new ray gun.
Cool. What does it do?
It shoots a ray.
I see. As per why it is you're calling it a ray gun. Okay. What is the result from said ray, or do you have multiple flavors of ray? You have multiple settings. You can do different things. What can it do?
Well, it's got stun. It's got low. It's got medium, which is labeled to the side, owie. And then you could go full throttle max, which will evaporate those sons of guns, just like a disruptor on Star Trek. What about that?
All right. So what we're talking about here is different levels of disruption, and it could be just disrupting the neurological signals from the brain, therefore rendering somebody unconscious like a really, really good taser, I guess. And
How easy is the selection process on this thing? Because I would hate to think I'd get up in the morning and I'm making toast and suddenly I vaporize it and they're going to start all over again.
Well, if you're making toast with a ray gun,
blueprint. Blueprint's the, 1980s Star Trek. You have to have a little select switch on the side.
So you're talking about the thing on, like, say, Next Generation, right? Like the small weapon that sometimes resembled a gun, but more often than not, like a little remote control.
Yeah. It strongly resembled one of the things you used to scan UPC codes with.
Okay. So, gotcha. The scanning tool that some people do refer to as a gun, like that. And then you have a selector switch on it, which allows you to either stun said... So this is only to deal with living things and doing combat with them. This is the purpose of said ray gun, right?
Oh, no. I could see you using it for boulder removal.
Okay, so it does things to inorganic or non-living material as well.
Be easier than weed eating.
Hey, it's all carbon.
Okay, it's all carbon. Gotcha. Well, if you simplify it that way and then you have something that deals with it, okay, I gotcha. I'm sort of following along. Again, I'm not the level of genius you are, but I can follow. Okay.
No. It wasn't me. I ripped off Tesla. I admit it.
Oh,
I got files. It's cool.
So this is a Tesla.
I told you, when I was in the former Yugoslavia, I brought them home. That's cool.
All right.
Finders keepers.
Hey, that's the way a lot of people function, you know? So, I got you. Any questions for Jimmy James, the scientist, BP?
Well, I'm just wondering what got him, towards the ray gun type. I mean,
I don't know how we've gotten to this point, BP.
Most people, though, that have done something on the ray gun end of things have always gone big, something that could, wipe out a planet. So just wondering what made you consider personal protection or personal carry of a ray gun, and if it becomes standard form. And then are we going to see the lawsuits happen where, it's really not a conventional musket, therefore our Second Amendment foes are going to be, you know, complaining about the production of this thing right off the bat.
I mean, would it be like
I'd say we got a right to carry a red gun.
Well, you could also specifically argue it's not enumerated in the Constitution directly. I mean, there's no mention of ray guns of any kind. So,
but it says bare arms, and I would think a ray gun would fall under the arms protection.
You think so? Would it be considered just...
Well, regulate bazookas.
I just asked the question.
It didn't even mention cannons. Those were around back then, weren't they?
This is true. Does everyone have the right? I've always wondered that, actually. Do you have the right to own a cannon?
Constitutionally, yes. In your jurisdiction, a bunch of weirdos will come and get you.
Well, I don't know. You know, I'm in Georgia. I'm not so sure that a bunch of weirdos will come and get me. Honestly.
Well, it's like, where do you draw the line on a potato gun? I mean, you know, shooting a flaming potato or a tennis ball at somebody's one thing, but when you make a potato gun big enough to shoot a bowling ball, now are we in that area of confiscation?
Well, but then again, you know, you can take a paintball gun and you can either freeze the paintballs or you can put marbles in that sucker, can't you? Now, because you change the... ammunition, you definitely change the intensity of the effect from the thing. I mean, you fire a paintball, you know, it might sting, it's uncomfortable, whatever. It doesn't even generally break a window, but you put, you know, a decent marble in it, not, you know, these little marble-shaped pieces of glass that will probably just explode on impact when they hit something substantial, but like an actual marble in it. Or you freeze the paintballs, as I said. A frozen paintball is pretty dangerous when you fire it. You know, by changing the nature of the load, you get a different result, don't you?
Well, that was an argument that we used back during the 9/11 days when they were talking about, you know, the strength of steel and the towers were made of this and that, blah, 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 blah. A lot of people didn't realize that the tensile strength of the aluminum used in the wings and that on an airplane actually has a higher tensile strength than the steel that was used in the tower. So, I mean, that down to just a matter of science. Yeah, an airplane wing can go through the aluminum cladding and the outside steel of the towers as high as it was, because at that height, the steel was only about a quarter of an inch thick. So, but we used to use the argument pumpkins.
Well, look, fair enough. And there could be a lot of arguments about the nature of the load and, the intensity of the ray gun. But we could discuss other things if you join in, you the listener, if you're hearing us just after 8:30 p.m. Eastern on the 5th day of August, 2022. We are live, 319-527-5016. That is the number to call, 319-527-5016. The Friday night open mic with my co-host B. Pete, and whoever calls in will continue after this.
Revelation through conversation.
When a fan of the Ocelli Effect calls in to the Ocelli Effect.
I just wanted to call in and tell you and Michael Swanson and JT Sicily and all of the guests that you have how much I love your show. Always interesting. It's always informative. I just wanted to tell you in person on the phone. I mean, I love you. I love your show. I love everything you do. I will always be there to support you. You know that.
We appreciate you so much. You have no idea.
Thanks. And most of our fans just send hate mail and death threats.
Shelly.com.
I have a chance to go need, yeah. You're kidding me. You're kidding me. You're kidding me.
Revelation through conversation.
Learn from our relatively recent history, my brother. That's where I'm coming from. I say our power is peaceful.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media. Chuck O'Shelley.
Second half of the first hour of the O'Shelley Effect going on here on a Friars Day or a Friday night, and it is the open mic. So you can join us, 319-527-5016. That is the number to call, 319-527-5016. And if not, if you don't want to call in by a phone, you can reach out to me, charles.ocelli on Skype. Send me a message, and I can call you into the show. Thus far, we've taken a call from Jimmy James, who has introduced an interesting topic to the open mic. But anything the newest caller brings up, they can throw it out there for a topic and they get priority. 319-527-5016. My co-host B-Pete is also with me. So, B-Pete, where shall we take this segment? Do you have anything in mind? Do you want to catch up on news? Or shall we continue to discuss the ray gun and the ramifications of weaponization?
We can catch up on news. It's been a while since we've done that. You know, I'm just trying to look at a list here of things that have happened during the week. Been kind of a slow week news-wise.
Yeah, pretty much. I'll tell you what, you organize your news for a minute, and I'll just discuss one thing, and then we'll check in with Jimmy James, and you should have something ready by then that you want to talk about. How about this? Alex Jones. Let's just go there. Excuse me. Yeah.
$1 million. 4.1. That's just in the first of three cases.
Well, you have the possibility. I saw the figure in a headline of $47 million. Yeah. So now, is that really what's going to get paid out here? Probably not. There's probably going to be appeals, answers, objections that are going to go on already.
His company, the holding company, not just InfoWars, but his holding company itself has officially filed for bankruptcy. Which is weird. They tried to do a chapter. They filed for a Chapter 5 bankruptcy, which allows them to go bankrupt, but also allows for them to pay off a certain amount of damages. So the limit is like $7.5 million.
Yeah.
Well, he got hit with the 4.1 million. So as it is now, what he's been hit with will allow him to do this. And they're arguing now, what about on the next case when they file for damages and that amount puts him over the 7.5? Would he still be able to claim? And you've got some lawyers saying, well, at the time that he filed, it was only $4.1 million that he owed in the way of damages. So, you know, it all depends on what comes out of the it's on the tip of my tongue. The penalty phase. You know, he was awarded, the two families that sued him in this first case were awarded 4.1 in compensatory damages. Now they're going for punitive damages.
Yeah,
and that's what say the amount may be getting so high that he can never get out from under it. But, you know, he has filed for bankruptcy protection. I don't know what's going to be left in the company. He apparently pulled out about $60 million in the past year, getting ready for these trials to start. So,
well, and that's what they've been able to reconstruct thus far. It doesn't mean that that's the full story. And frankly, look, it's not like I have any sort of sympathy for the guy, really. But bottom line is, every big company will turn around and try and make maneuvers one way or another to mitigate the damage. I mean, if you can hire the right lawyer and you pay that guy $2 million and he cuts your $100 million settlement down to $40 million, win-win. This is the kind of thing that's going on. He's making maneuvers. He's trying to get around it. He's got various shell companies, which I know for a fact that he's got various companies that, you know, handle things, and he's able to maneuver money through and all that. That's why when other claims have been made against him, because there's less headline-grabbing lawsuits that have been filed against him, you know, for things that don't involve the Sandy Hoax silliness. But he's turned around, he's maneuvered his way out of a couple other things where people have claimed that, you know, he, through unfair practices, you know, took advantage of them and, you know, didn't pay them the amount of money that they should have been entitled to, and this and that kind of thing. That's happened to him before. Not to mention the fact that he also tried to hide assets when it was time to get a divorce. Normal behaviors here. I mean, it's just, it is what it is when you're talking about somebody who's got hundreds of millions of dollars. I don't think he's a billionaire, but he's got hundreds of millions of dollars, at least in his operations, which is too easy to see that he does. They make statements about, you know, 2021 being a sort of special year for him, because in certain ways he thrived quite a bit, right? And of course, there is the pre-Trump and post-Trump financial status of InfoWars and the various companies that are connected to Jones Corp over there. And frankly, you know what? They're going to do their best to hide a lot of stuff. And this is just normal. This is the way it goes. I mean, you know, in any way, shape, or form, these guys are always going to try and minimize the damages, whatever they may be. And I don't even know that I feel like discussing exactly if punitive damages are warranted or whatever. Jack discussed it yesterday a bit, and you know, from his perspective, as somebody who had actually worked for and with the guy, you know, he's got a different point of view and a little more sympathetic, like maybe nobody should be paying punitive damages from this. But, you know, compensation is compensation, and maybe that stuff should go to, you know, the greater funds that have been created to memorialize the individuals who died and that kind of thing, so that the family doesn't actually make any sort of financial gain on this. Jack seemed to come down on that side of it all. And some people still think this is a First Amendment issue, which I don't. Because, again, you know, the First Amendment means that the government doesn't have the right to legislate against you having free speech, but there could indeed be penalties if your free speech causes things to happen.
You know, it's funny. We went through this when Fetzer had to end up, you know, going to court and got hit with $1 million penalty for things that he did. He still makes that argument that this is a free speech argument, and we've been denied our free speech. And, you know, I don't know why people don't understand. Yes, you have the ability to say whatever you want about whomever you want, but that doesn't mean that there's not, you know, consequences for what you claim. Mm-hmm. If you actually, you know, defame someone in what you're saying, yes, mm-hmm. there it is a free speech issue. You have a right to say it. You also have a right to be held accountable for any damages that are done through what you've said. So I don't know why people don't get that last part. It's kind of like the religion clause mm-hmm. in the Constitution, you know, in the First Amendment, that the, you know, the government shall not establish religion or prohibit the free exercise thereof. And everybody forgets that last part, prohibiting mm-hmm. the free exercise thereof. You never hear them mention that. You know, this is kind of the same thing. Oh, well, this is just a free speech issue. No, it's not a free speech issue. You had the right to say what you wanted to say. Now, the person who you defamed has a right to take you to court and sue the pants off of you.
Well, and that's the other thing with religion, too, is that you have the right to exercise it, and the government's not supposed to legislate against you. It doesn't mean that they have to specifically enable you, though. Okay, that's not something that they have to do, so long as they're not preventing you from your practices, right? So it's a matter of restraint, not a matter of enabling or protecting, even necessarily in a direct sense. So it's always a dicey situation, though, because these are very emotionally attached things, you know.
Yeah, we're seeing lawsuits start to hit the courts now over the shutdowns when COVID started. Mm-hmm. And there was one church in California, I want to say it was Grace Church, where the pastor is, he's pretty well known in speaking circuits and things like that. And they were holding services on Sunday, and the state took them to court, threatened to throw the pastor in jail for a while, but mm-hmm. actually shut him down, and they took him to court, and the church won.
Mm-hmm.
Basically saying, you know, they do not have a right to shut you down. It says in the Constitution you have the right to, you have the freedom of exercise of a freedom of religion. So
mm-hmm.
we're starting to see those cases hit the courts now, and so far they have been in favor of the church organizations who said that it was a violation of their constitutional rights to have the door shut by the government.
See, there you go. And I think, I hate to say this, because I think that, first of all, churches need to be taxed. And secondly, you know, because there is the business element, and then there is the religious practice. And I think these are two separate things, even though they are adjoined to one another. They're two separate things, and I don't see how the exemption should stand in that way. If you have something that's completely nonprofit that is serving the community entirely, I see that argument, and maybe you don't tax them the same way you do, you know, somebody opening up a burger joint, but still, I don't see the point of the exemption. And it's fascinating, too, because why not just say, look, okay, your doors can be open, but you need to tell people that they are coming at their own risk. You know, I like the at your own risk labels. You know what I mean? Sure, mandate that. You have to label this. You're coming here to gather at your own risk. And, of course, a lot of churches decided to go for the virtual services. And I'm sure that didn't turn out to be as profitable because, you know, sitting in your own home, maybe you don't feel as compelled to put something in the collection plate if you got to hit the tip button because nobody's going to see you not do it. You know what I'm saying? So maybe that was part of the problem, but anyway, opens up a lot of issues here. And as we get through the next portion, I do want to encourage people to call in 319-527-5016. I just bring up the Alex Jones thing because, again, it was in the news today. And trust me, that's not the last you're going to hear from it. This judgment is not, you know, the only thing that's going to occur. There's probably going to be more movements of money, more arguments, which I think are specious about the, you know, well, it's a First Amendment issue. I don't think that that's what the issue is here. And again, if you do things from a public platform, no matter how it is you attained it, and you cause others to act at your behest, there's got to be some accountability. So, you know, what can I say? And I think plenty of people need to be held accountable for when they inspire stuff among crowds of people that they have from whatever platform it is. And the exemptions that people have given to certain people based on really their emotional reaction and their support. They would not support somebody who didn't agree with them so easily in their free speech. What? You ever notice that? It's like they're willing to say about free speech for people who they agree with. But the people that they don't agree with, it's almost like, no, let's all act to shut them down. I don't care if the government does it, the court does it, or you do it. Boycott them, everything, you know? But
well, we saw this over the COVID issue and the way that social media platforms were censoring people and locking their accounts and kicking them off their platforms because of trying to get, you know, actual information out there.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, why don't we see more court cases of fraud against these politicians that come out and just blatantly lie to us about things?
Mm-hmm.
Provable lies. I mean, demonstrably provable lies.
Yeah.
Why are we not seeing the courts used to get these people out of office? Because they're doing nothing but lying in their own pockets based off these falsehoods.
Right.
I don't understand why we haven't gone that route yet, because there's a whole list of politicians that would be, even if we went as a civil matter and not a criminal matter, the mm-hmm. way you do on these civil suits, you know, Pelosi, McConnell, all of them, both sides of the aisle, we'd be collecting money from people.
Right. Hey, at some point before this show ends, I got to get your point of view about Pelosi's China visit, too. I do want to hear it, not right now, because we only got a little bit of time left in this segment, and I want to give Jimmy James a chance to throw something in here. So, Jimmy James, you got another topic, or you want to continue to talk about the ray gun, or tail on to something me and BP were talking about?
The Alex Jones. Don't like him. Don't. First off, what you say he damaged these people somehow? What? How did he damage them? Who hurt them?
Well, when you are out there making statements and characterizing and demonizing people, and then others take actions where they're approaching them, they're harassing them, they're threatening them, these kinds of things, based on the fact that you're saying, well, you're nothing but a fraud who has come forth to just take away people's guns, and that's all you're doing, and people are literally trying to intimidate them personally. I mean, the one guy was shot at. You know what I mean? There was a lot of different things that went on here.
He was shot.
His house was shot at. Yeah, his house was shot by somebody going by, and yeah.
Does he live in a city?
No, this would not be typical to where he lives. It's not like he lives in a place where there's drive-bys. No.
Yeah, I don't know. They could judge whatever millions they want. At the end of the day, it is a First Amendment issue, and he will win eventually. And so will Fetzer. And I don't even, it's not like I like nor endorse them. Nonetheless, that's the way it is.
Well, let me ask you a question, Jimmy James. Let me just pose this to you and see if you feel the same way. If I started saying that, let's take you out of the equation, but let's just say that I started making accusations against BP here, except with his, government name. And I said that that he did horrible things. Let's pick something. Should I make you really despicable, BP, or just, slightly dangerous? Which would you prefer?
Let's go the full max, because that's usually what Fetzer and Alex Jones do.
Okay, so let's go
Let me cut through a lot of stuff right here.
Yeah.
See, BP is not a public figure. These kids went out blathering on every news outlet there is. So they are public figures.
No. This is not David Hogg. This is the parents from Sandy Hook who were not out there trying to be...
What, they actually had kids? Did these people actually have kids killed?
Yes, they did. The claim is that they didn't. Let's not go too deep into it. These are parents who, again, became part of a news story. And let's just, for the sake of argument, assume that it's true, at least, that their kids were killed at school, okay? Let's just go with that, please. I mean, if you want to go into the other argument, we can do that, but whole other argument.
I'm not making an argument.
Okay.
Fine, so he said mean things about them after they became public figures.
No, not mean things and not public figures. That's no.
Okay, so he didn't say mean things to public figures.
No.
As they went on CNN and started making the rounds, they became public figures.
Oh, you think so?
An actual definition, a legal definition as to whether somebody can be considered a public figure.
Yeah, go ahead.
And be... being brought into the spotlight because of the incident that took place, you're not a public figure. Fetzer tried that with Lenny Posner,
it's eventually going to go Fetzer's way, because these people did, at the end of the day, choose to go to studios and talk about gun control, which has nothing to do with their children's deaths.
Yeah, okay, so you're jumping ahead and not even letting me finish the premise, okay? You're jumping ahead quite a bit and not letting me finish the premise, and you're dismissing a whole bunch of this here. There's a time period where basically they're just the victims of circumstance, and the news media decides to chase them at first. They are not going out immediately with all sorts of these programs publicly to go out against guns and all that. Not right away. First off, they're just being hounded by the press to start with. Immediately when that happens, that doesn't mean that they voluntarily became a public figure and opened themselves up to this. Okay, at least in the immediate.
It doesn't matter if you volunteer.
But it does legally. It does legally matter. Oh, no, no, no. It does legally matter. I mean, if you're just in proximity to somebody and the press decides to find out your name and they're running around with it and you don't even grant an interview, so now you're a public figure. I can do what I want to you. Does that make sense?
See, I don't know how these people came to anyone's attention before they started making the rounds on the news channels.
Because just like any other event, as soon as it becomes newsworthy, I mean, would you ever know the stupid kid's name, Brandon Laundry, right? Would you even know that guy's name had there not been the news media tracking down what happened to this other person? Well, you might have if you had gone and checked out that's a bad example, actually, because he was out there trying to make himself a public figure. Any victim in a murder case, pick another murder, anyone, where you have family that survives or whatever, and the press is coming around to, you know, what do you have to say? Do you know anything what happened? Were you involved? And they're just doing that. Does that mean that you suddenly have become a public figure? In a sense that you are now open to ridicule, you're now open to people digging into you automatically any which way they want to go. No, it's not. It's not the same as coming out and trying to make yourself into a public figure.
As the law is now, I think you have to prove that what you said you intended with maliciousness. Now, if you said that these people, for instance, were in the Ku Klux Klan, that would be highly malicious because these days, of course, racists are despised and you would lose your job and your livelihood and all that.
Okay, so that would be something that if somebody was making that, okay, I was trying to get through an example of making BP into the demon. So let me play along with the rest of that and I'll throw your thing in there. So I say that BP, with his real government name now, mind you, who lives here at this particular place, is not only a Klan member, but how about he also trades in child porn? How about that? So these are two things that he does. And this is the kind of guy he is. And he needs to be stopped. Because he is now endangering a community. He's on the internet. I made the mistake of giving him a platform. Let's just imagine this all happened, right? He's got a blog. He is dangerous because he's out there. What you don't know it, whether you know it or not, what he's really pushing is the normalization of the Klan and, you know, kiddie porn. I'll just throw two horrible things on there at once. Right?
Make me a Nazi member of the Nazi party, too.
Okay, so while you're doing your Klan thing, you're also a Nazi. Sure, why not? Why don't we throw some drugs in there, too? What's the best drug to demonize you with? Well, let's see. If you're a Klan member and you're kiddie porn, I guess crystal meth, right?
No, important fentanyl.
Okay.
Carfentanyl,
that's better.
Worse than fentanyl.
You're right. That's better. Wait, you're importing it or you're doing what?
I'm importing carfentanyl, which is the veterinary equivalent of fentanyl. It's like 100 times more powerful than fentanyl. They use it on elephants, large animals, elephants, things
okay.
like that.
Fair enough. So you're actually taking the... Okay, so BP's involved in all that. And people in his community, because I've also given where he lives and all that, they decide that because he is such a horrible person, and look, if you got those things on you, and I say that that's the kind of guy that we're dealing with here, and he's out there publicly interacting, and some of his stuff that he's doing is now in support of one of those things or another, okay? And people in that community decide to take action against BP, whether they start harassing him or refusing to serve him at a restaurant or telling him when he shows up to a bar, we don't serve your kind here. This kind of thing starts to happen to him, right? So, am I liable?
So he's being shunned.
Well, not just being shunned. Being shunned is very minimal.
For one thing, everything you listed is against the law with the exception of being a racist.
Okay. Being a race. All right, so let's remove it from the equation. Let's remove the meth.
This is also against law if you look at, you know, hate crimes and things like that. So, to a degree, yes.
Yeah, that's true. You can't actually... Well, okay, so not only is he a member of those things, which are legal, you're legally allowed to be a member of the non-defunct clans and such, but let's just say, yeah, how about that? He's actually encouraging others. He's encouraging others directly to commit hate crimes. And so they... okay, that's fair enough. But what you're saying is the stuff that that I would be accusing, well, defrauding the public, turning around and creating organizations, all right, which they end up doing in the wake of this to sort of, you know, publicly work against, to publicly work for gun control under fraudulent pretenses. You're collecting money under a fraud. So I guess... that would be number one. They would be out there committing fraud. It's not quite the crime of hate crimes or drugs or kiddie porn, but it's still a crime. They're accusing him of being fraudulent and doing things in a fraudulent manner in the wake of the, you know, even collecting money, let's just say, for the burial costs of their kids, where people would send them money. Well, they defrauded those people because it was a con job. So it's a minor crime they're committing. But because of that, that's not the point anyway. I'm not just accusing him of a crime, but I am accusing him of a crime that is now causing other results where people harass him, threaten him, maybe even take shots at him, right? Maybe they deny him access to certain places. Harassment is something you're not supposed to encourage. I know for a fact you can get charged for stuff like that, where if you're encouraging the harassment...
Only if you're a Republican. I just seen a guy, an assassin, show up, tried to kill Justice Kavanaugh and his family after Schumer's specifically threatened him I don't know how many times. So, you know.
Well, see, I'm not even there yet, and I don't think I brought left or right wing politics into this. But anyway, back to it. My point is,
being a Nazi, I'd be on the right, according to the mixed up.
Okay, maybe, but it's not technically part of the equation. Okay, so let's take away the Nazi party thing and go back to the Klan. I mean, the Klan was very democratic at one point and has been also Republican, so at least that serves both sides. No.
No, let's not even go there. The Klan was invented by the Democrats. It was maintained by the Democrats. It's not been a Republican thing. Trust me.
Okay. Well, I don't know. You know, those 7 or 8 guys that had the little organization there that Forrest was part of, I don't know if they would be Democrats or Republicans.
Probably
they were Confederates fighting to the South, so that's a pretty good clue.
Yeah, but I couldn't put the actual Confederates, you know, who just believed in slavery as a primary thing. I don't think that was Democrat specifically, although it was not Republican, or at least the major faction of the Republican Party at the time to believe in it. But
none of them supported slavery. That was the one thing they agreed on, was that slavery should be abolished.
Yeah, it seemed that way.
Do you know what the NRA was founded for? The NRA was the first civil rights organization and has formed to arm former slaves against the Democratic Confederate Klan.
I don't know for certain that's factual, because honestly I've seen arguments about that. Look, I don't even want to get into the NRA and what it is versus what it was either. But even the initial formation of the Klan is not the same thing that we ended up dealing with later. There have been several incarnations, and at one point, quite frankly, it was 100% populated by people that would also call themselves Democrats. But anyway, point is, I don't think that the Klan as it stands, if we're making him a current member, would be seen as a Republican or a Democrat organization. So, again, I don't think it's left or right wing, but still, we're getting away from the point, aren't we? If you accuse somebody of horrible things, doesn't matter how they vote, and you're telling people that they are a danger to either the wider community or a smaller community in a more localized sense, you have a particular motivation for people to take actions. Now,
he says these people, by saying that they lied, how did he imply that they were dangerous to the community? Or are we back to BP the pretend version.
No, we're literally in talking about, well, they're endangering your rights as gun owners, aren't they? Because they're literally part of a fraudulent program to go after law-abiding, constitutionally sound citizens who are armed. They are literally involved in a greater plot, right, under false pretense to do what? To disarm the American public. I mean, what else do you want? That's part of it. But they're also raising money, and obviously...
I agree with every bit of that. All I would say is their kids really died. They were probably flaming liberals before their kids died, and they were flaming liberals after their kids died. They tried to take advantage of it, and these people also tried to take advantage of it. Boo-hoo.
Okay, well, about two of those parents, I know, as a matter of fact, you're absolutely speaking in the wrong direction. About two of the sets of parents. They were not like that at all before this incident. And that's only because my first wife's family's from Connecticut. So let's just say members of her family might know these
Fine.
People.
I don't care if they were all George Bush's cousins.
Okay, fair enough, because it's not relevant. It's not even relevant. Look, you see, this is the problem.
Just get to the point.
I'm trying.
Right.
But it's not relevant here about the left, the right, blah, blah, blah. Not relevant. My point is, if you're accusing somebody of horrible things and you are encouraging people to act, right, against those people.
There you go, encouraging. So Alex Jones said, pick up a ball back and go bash these people.
Not like that, no. But what you need to do is, this is a war. These people are the enemy. You need to take actions against them. You need to stand up and make your voice be heard. You need to resist them on every level that you can. You have to be part of the info war.
That is typical political talk at every political rally.
Hold on. You need to go after these people as part... You're missing the ecosphere in which this is being presented, in a place where he's telling you that these are the enemy of humanity, that these people are the collection. This is one aspect.
Yeah, how do you even know he said that? You're always misquoting Trump, so how do I know that Alex Jones actually even said that?
I've never misquoted Trump, to the best of my knowledge. And I'm telling you...
You said that he laughed at dead soldiers, and that's been proven false.
Laughed at what soldier?
So right there's one.
Laughed at what soldier? What are we talking about?
The Democrats were around, passed around a lie and all the usual sites saying
I
that
see.
When Trump was president, he was somewhere and was talking about dead American soldiers and called them losers. This has been shown to be completely false.
Well, I don't even recall. Recall that. But you see how we have to go into a defense mode of Trump over over something that absolutely has nothing to do with him. When I'm trying to tell you about a specific incident with a broadcaster using his platform in a particular way, it's got nothing to do with Trump, and you're jumping to a defense of Trump and going back to that, which is not the issue I'm even discussing. Anyways, look, you hold on, and we'll continue it in the next segment.
What would I do? Revelation through conversation. In a radio show / podcast. You want the good news? Listen to the Ocelli Effect. Chuck Ocelli is the most underrated voice in all media. News, education, and entertainment. The Daily Bread from Ocelli.com. Go there. Save yourself from ignorance. Ocelli.com. Revelation through conversation. Ocelli.com.
Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, he knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapons. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination spoken to her claims?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
So once again, join into the program, 319-527-5016. We'll just have a little more of this break, and then we'll be right back to you. 319-527-5016. Be part of the show.
Support Chuck O'Chelly at Chelly.com.
There's no money in it, so...
Yeah, that is
that's the problem.
That's the biggest problem, I think. And, you know, some people would say that, look, you're in an age when you can be independently supported, but quite frankly, I'm on that business model, too, and look, I'm not going to complain, but I'm going to complain. Okay, because people want to support you. They love you to death, but honestly...
So if you're listening in, this is a very unsubtle request to support the damn show. And I want you to do this, too, because... the Ocelli Report is one of the few places where Greg Palast can get his stuff out. I mean, you'll still see my bylines in some of these outlets, but nevertheless, I used to be a regular on CNN and on MSDNC, but no more.
Revelation through conversation.
Ocelli.com.
Every time I put it on my face, I'm able to breathe just a little bit deeper.
What are people saying about MyTrueEssence.net?
I'm going to tell you something serious, man. I just want to tell you listeners, I bought some of that Modifilin from Christy, and she made me up some of this emu oil mixed with some other stuff. I don't know what's in it, but I like the way it smelled. And I started putting it on, rubbing it on my foot, rubbing it on my knee, and like the second day, I just noticed it. I'm walking around, I'm like, damn, my knee is loose.
I can tell you that oil you gave me helped me with my carpal and my shoulder problem. If it wasn't, I wouldn't be working.
My ankles sort of really be pesky and bother me. And I'm telling you, the pain just went away. Essential oils rule!
And when I put that on, it's like my skin came alive.
MyTrueEssence.net.
Chris Graves. Airs Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Ocelli.com Radio. Get mad with Chris Graves.
Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, she knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapons. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination look into her claims?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks, Larry Hancock. For more information, go to larry-hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at amazon.com in digital or physical form.
The views expressed by callers, co-hosts, or anyone else who happens to get on the air at Ocelli.com do not necessarily reflect the views of Ocelli.com or Chuck Ocelli, and we are not responsible for any stupidity which might ensue. Thank you.
Smoke them if you got them. The last segment of the Ocelli Effect tonight here on a Friday, because I'm not going to go to another break. Apparently, I let one linger a little too long, so we'll just finish out the show this way, and you can be a part of it. 319-527-5016. 319-527-5016. That's the number to call, or you can send me a message on Skype. I'll be more than happy to add you into the call. But I have to call you in that case. Otherwise, 319-527-5016. And it occurs to me, BP, I didn't turn over. I tried to do a simulation of demonizing you. But I didn't turn over even a portion of the show to you yet to control. So with one caller on the line so far, the only lone man standing there on the phone, Jimmy James. And, hey, what do we got? A little more than a half hour to kill. About 40 minutes, so let's give you the biggest segment of the night to work with. Go in any direction you want, my friend.
Well, you mentioned Pelosi's trip to China, and yes, I'm glad that someone went. I wish it had been somebody besides her, but she, you know, I guess that's the thing. The last person to go before her was, Newt Gingrich, so, you know, Speaker of the House goes.
Was that the last Speaker of the House to go? Yeah. Really?
Yeah, because he was the, in fact, he was the first, Speaker of the House to go when he went.
Okay.
He was the last, I think he was the last administration person to visit Taiwan. But some comments have been made by the White House in that, you know, we still believe in the one China policy and no, we don't support Taiwan independence. And that's where I part ways with the White House on this. I think Taiwan should be independent. I think they, we should accept them as an ally. Mm. We've kind of looked out over them ever since the big revolution that forced China to go communist. So yeah, that little bastion of democracy there on that island, I think we should do everything we can to protect it. Mm. I mean, they're vital to our manufacturing supply chain. We do a lot of business with them. And I think it was a good thing that we went. Now, Pelosi, to me, was the wrong person to go. I think someone from the administration should have gone and not left it up to her to, because she's just riding it for the headlines. That's all there is to it.
There's no other purpose, right? Other than to just say that she did it. And as I pointed out on the show last night with Mike, which I haven't released the podcast, but we might just put out a 1 hour thing with Mike. From last night, we very intensely discussed the machinations over the Chinese issue when it comes to U.S. Policy. And quite frankly, I can't find anything coherent in it. It seems to be completely, pivoting. Yeah, they're pivoting. They're pivoting all the time because they're spinning. It's like a dance. And it doesn't matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter like what administration's in. I mean, basically, ever since Nixon went to China, right, and did his thing and met with Mao, ever since that happened, I can't find a coherent business strategy, political strategy, or even like, you know, when it comes to the concept of, you know, social issues, let's say. Nobody has been... Yeah, go ahead.
They backed themselves into a corner. You can't say that you support an independent Taiwan and not say I support China, who claims to have sovereignty over Taiwan. And that's been the problem with every administration since Nixon went to China.
Yeah, well,
this one China. So why does there have to be one China? Okay, why can't we have Taiwan? And it's so ridiculous. I'll give you an example. In the K-pop industry, there's a lot of foreign people that become members of entertainment groups. Mm-hmm. And these entertainment companies pull from Thailand, China, Vietnam, anywhere in the Asian market. One, because bringing foreigners in opens up an additional market to that group's ability to sell items. Two, I mean, there's some pretty good talent out there. So they shop around. This one group has two members from China. One is from Communist China. The other one is from Taiwan. And they went on one of these music bank shows, and they popped the flag of origin above everybody's head, because at that time you had three Koreans, you had a girl from Thailand, two girls from China, one of them being from Taiwan. They popped a Taiwanese flag over her head in that, you know, like emoticons on the screens. Mm-hmm. So it was only up there for just a second or two. And they mentioned that she was from Taiwan, and the flack that they caught because they dissed Communist China in bringing out the individuality of Taiwan. I mean, that's how touchy this subject is all around the world.
I'll tell you another weird example of that. Really fast, another weird example, because I know somebody's going to bring it up here, because we do have Jimmy James on the line. Remember when Trump accepted the congratulations, right? That was Taiwan, wasn't it? Or am I confusing things here? And it was like, so what? I took a congratulatory phone call, and people were like, you've done more to acknowledge, it was a big problem. I mean, everybody in entertainment has had this issue. I mean, NBA players having to figure out how to speak Chinese in order to apologize to China. There was a wrestler, I can't remember which wrestler it was, but a pretty big name, WWE. He had to like basically go ahead and apologize for making the wrong statement, or for, you know, doing something that was against Chinese government. The Communist Party of China, you know, if you do something that doesn't stand well with them, you know, they're afraid to lose this massive money. The NBA has been a primary example of it. But I mean, look, I'm lump sports and entertainment together because you kind of have to. It's all about this, right? It's this big, big, big issue. And people are afraid to piss off the communist government effectively because they'll lose billions of dollars. Or am I wrong?
And that's something. Yeah, that's something I've never understood, because we have openly been in support of Taiwan since the communist takeover. So for us to, you know, have to backtrack and apologize to communist China, I mean, it makes no sense. You know, pick a direction and go in it. Mm-hmm. But this back and forth, it doesn't do Taiwan any good to pull the carpet out from under them and say, oh, yeah, we support Taiwan and their democracy, but we don't support their independence. I mean, what kind of bull crap is that?
Well, and you certainly can't. Yeah. And you're certainly not allowed to criticize, you know, slave labor over there if, you know, the allegedly American companies benefit from it. Oh, don't talk about that. You know, people were highly shocked at how much Walmart was, you know, getting out of the situations there, where people were working in situations where it was basically slavery. You live in a closet in the factory, you know, you only get this small wage, and you're in a position where you're having to work yourself to death just to survive. No, that's acceptable, because I need my iPhone to be cheap enough, and also I want all my other cheap plastic crap to be cheap enough. That's all acceptable, but yeah, you know, and it's like there's been no consistency here from the corporate world, from the political realms, from even the people that are interested, again, in social consciousness. You know, again, that's almost an industry onto itself. There's no consistency here. So, you know,
it's the thing. Someone like Nike and what they, you know, Doug Stanhope had a joke in his routine about somebody. He was talking about the show Busted Abroad or Arrested Abroad, where people are in other countries and get arrested for stuff. He says, you know, what would it be like to have somebody arrested abroad, meaning someone from another country get arrested here? He says, you know, the guy gets convicted, goes to prison. He sends a letter home saying, you know, this is a wonderful place I'm living in compared to what he used to live in his foreign country. Mm-hmm. And he says, I make, 26 cents a day, which is more than Dad makes working for 40 hours at the Nike factory.
Right.
I mean, it's become a joke in people's stand-up routines about the hypocrisy of especially the elites in this country, talking about, you know, working conditions and oh, we have to support the unions, or the unions are the worst thing to ever come along. And they look at a country like China, and it's oblivious to them. It's like it doesn't even enter their mind that where their position is so hypocritical compared to what goes on in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And they would quick talk down this country before they would ever insult communist China. That's the thing that gets me more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And politicians are just as guilty of it.
Well, you got to swing it at all, and you got to put it in its proper context. Otherwise, you know, what are you doing except making a lot of hot air? But then you could go into the weird world of Herschel Walker and the air exchange.
Herschel, God bless him. You know, let him. I hope he wins. I mean, it's just going to be an empty chair. But
what's the proper Southern thing to say there? Bless his heart, I guess. You know, and also proof that football can do damage. Anyways, what can I say? But this whole thing
brings up a point.
Yeah.
But look at Brittany Griner, who now just got hit with 9 years in a Russian prison.
Mm-hmm.
And the special conditions of her being able to come home. I mean, eventually she's going to be coming home. They'll work out some deal. I mean, Biden will give up every bad guy that he could possibly, you know, he'll tell him, go look in the damn basements, find somebody we forgot about that we can give Russia, because we got to get this girl back. I mean, it's ridiculous. Anybody, me or you, go get caught for what she did, we do it for 9 years, and it was like, well, we'll see you, we've done what we can.
And
but not for her.
They're literally kind of releasing the guy that the Lord of War was based on. He was such a prolific arms dealer. Mm-hmm. To unfriendly nations.
Mm-hmm.
All for a woman who was rich, spoiled, and knowingly went into a foreign country, knowing full well what she was doing.
Yeah, I don't even know what to say about that old, you know, Brittany Griner, whatever her name is. And you know, there are literally people debating as to whether, well, gee, if she wasn't, if the WNBA had a greater following because of all you misogynistic people who won't follow it, you know, it's like, what is this? What is this
but
nonsense?
Chuck, I'm sure you'll be the first one to point out that even 10 years ago, if she'd have been arrested anywhere in the United States, she probably would have gotten the same sentence.
Well, now, see, there you go. Exactly. And there are still people sitting in prison for stuff, you know, like this, despite the fact that the laws have changed, even though, you know, you ever take a look at the pile of appeals that are out there where it's like, hey, look, under current laws, I wouldn't even have a problem here now, you know, but there's a huge stack of that now, and it's not going anywhere. Nobody's talking about it. Yeah.
Now, the last number I mostly disagreed, as I do think there's political things causing this, because I notice it's never politically left people being prosecuted. They're targeting people so-called right, anything other than the DNC talk points. And China and the Formosa Straits, man, that's complicated. You guys are, I mean, I got like 100 years I could... Here's the main thing. So Yeah, Nixon opened it. And Bill Clinton went over to China and basically kissed their butts in order to get their cheap labor and get them to join the World Trade Organization. He literally gave them all sorts of military technologies, missiles, this, that, and the other thing.
Sure.
And that's really when we started having problems with China, would be in the mid-90s when they just kept getting bigger and powerful.
Well, I don't even want to unpack that, because constantly, as I said, I don't see coherent actions being taken by any party, any group. It's always, I'm telling you, it's like, let's see how many different directions we can go in with China and see what happens.
Well, that's the problem. I see, in the old days, it didn't matter if you were a Democrat or a Republican. Everyone was against communism. I'm talking about during the Cold War.
Yeah.
I mean, didn't see many folks out there waving the hammer and sickle out there.
No, you didn't see that.
And yet now, like you say, it seems to be who's in business with them, who's making money from them.
Yeah, exactly. That's all it is. And even then, it's different opportunists at different times taking different positions. And got to tell you, a lot of these corporate people who are more than happy to suck up to the Chinese.
Corporate people, they are Chinese. They're all just one worlders. The corporates are so screwed up. We need major reform there.
There you go.
All these, they're internationalists.
Your borders, your flags, and your thoughts about nationalism are really irrelevant to somebody who just sees the entire world as one giant, gaming board for their business. So that's all there is to that. We do have another caller. B. Pete, did you have further points you wanted to bring out about this? Because, again, I did this exhaustive talk with Mike last night, and I still come down in that position of I don't even know who to point finger at.
I got one question for you, Chuck.
Uh-oh.
The whole political trial thing. Mm-hmm. How is it that Alex Jones can be tried in civil court, but Joy Reid can't? Exactly. In fact, I would say I've seen Joy Reid broadcasts, and I've seen Alex Jones broadcasts, and I would say she's 1,000 times more inflammatory.
I'm not aware of Joy Reid, taking people that weren't public figures of some type and pointing them out to an audience that they have ramped up in a way to really be activist against. I'm not aware of it. Not saying it didn't happen, but would love to explore it. If she's a scumbag who does that, then she deserves even worse treatment, because with the support of
good. So the Jones, I don't see. So you're saying that this? Well, never mind. You don't want to discuss it.
It's not that I don't want to discuss it. It's just that it's a waste of time if all we're going to do is go into the politics when I'm not even talking about something that's left, right, left versus right. We wound up in a left versus right discussion.
Well, there's two. Unfortunately, it's people on the right are being politically prosecuted. No habeas corpus. It's been way over 180 days. These people have served 2 years now on trespassing charges. Come on now.
And as I've tried to explain to you, there's plenty of people in the system who are no-name individuals who get caught in the system for longer over things like this all the time, and their political flag doesn't matter.
Not anymore. In and out. In and out.
That's
all these inner cities. You watching the news? In and out.
I don't got to watch Fox or whatever to figure that out, okay? Because I know people in the real world. So, I know what they're trying to present there as a point that, if you're only on the right or left, but telling you now, most of the time in these criminal prosecutions of random things, we're not talking about political issues. And people are caught up in the system all the time because they don't have the money and they don't have the lawyer and they don't have the juice to get the result they want. So you get caught up on things.
How is it in Washington, D.C. that I that was arrested at that time on different charges has long come and gone, and okay. yet these people sit.
Okay, well, still, again, for somebody sitting and being caught up in the system or being in lockup for 2 years and then turning around having time served afterwards because they plead down and all that, that to me is daily life in America. That's the way it's been for 20, 30 years. So I don't know why, you know, there's no special...
Sure, for criminals.
Yeah.
For criminals, sure.
But
when we're talking about charges that are so petty, trespassing and parading...
Okay, well, you know, you see them as political prisoners. I see them as just caught up in the system like anybody else would be, and that's the difference. What can I say?
Okay, wait. In 2016, exactly half the amount of people were protested, arrested, who protested Trump. You may remember they were wearing lovely hats, 400 and some odd, and they were all out the next day. Chuck, come on now.
Okay, in certain circumstances you have different results, that's for sure, but there have been people that have nothing to do with protests or whether they're wearing the pink hat or the red hat or anything else that just simply get caught up. You can call them a criminal if you want, but even if they're not convicted yet, they still wind up sitting. And that could be a gun possession charge, which, you know, needs to be adjudicated. You got to figure it out. No, shouldn't
they
be.
They really shouldn't be, and I don't know who is. I mean, as far as I know, everyone else seems to be getting speedy trials or no trials.
Yeah, no, that's not what happens to a lot of people. You have mixed results, and again,
now,
there's a serious inconsistency
in the
system. Are you
talking historically or now?
I'm talking
right
about
now,
over the
cities,
past.
You know,
over the past.
Having a lot of
This is why I try to get away from it, because it's pointless. 20, 30 years of my life, I'm watching people that wind up sitting in jail for a year, 2 years over stuff that doesn't even have this kind of spotlight on it. They end up getting caught with a gun, they get into a car accident, and they're stuck in a cell
there
for 18 months.
There you go.
Okay.
Now compare that to parading.
Yeah, okay.
Being a 60-year-old man that flew to Washington, D.C. to protest an imbecile being elected president.
Zero comparison, because they haven't even gone to trial and they're sitting there. And the gun charge is just that, a gun charge. It doesn't even mean that it has any validity to it whatsoever. They're just sitting there. This is a personal story that I know more than one person who's been through with a gun. That's questionable for some reason. And at the end of the day, even if they turn around and the gun doesn't mean anything because they don't wind up being convicted, they still convict them on some other stuff, make them agree so they can go the hell home after sitting and being out of circulation for 2 years. And this is, you know, people whose names you're not even going to know. Okay? I've seen it over and over again.
How many people were they? Yes. And were they in cities? And who were running these cities and these policies?
This is a mixed situation. In Georgia, most of the cities outside of Atlanta and the other one up there that's a nicer place, I forget. Most of the major cities here are actually not Democrat-run, and most of the counties are not Democrat-run. If you take a look at the area in Georgia, it's mostly red.
Fulton, Atlanta's all Democrat. That's where all the problems happen to be. But I thought you were referring to an earlier time in your life when you said...
We could talk about that, too.
30 years ago.
We could talk about that, too. Same kind of thing goes on. And
yeah, facing problems in these cities. Sure,
well, guess
what
who's...
Can I tell you?
Yeah, guess who's running. But see, guess who ran New York City during the time I saw this in New York? Rudy Giuliani. You know, and then when you take a look at who was running some of the cities when I saw it in New Jersey, well, quite often those were Democrats. And then when you see it in some of the places that are outside of the cities, like, you know, the rest of Atlantic County outside of Atlantic City, you take a look at who's running it there, Republicans. It's both. You get it? These prosecutors...
Not really.
Oh, okay. Nah, that's the disagreement.
The
so...
In the inner cities, it's... Problem seems to be that they aren't prosecuting
yes,
them,
that they're
so
not
they go right back
right.
out and are...
That they're not Republicans. I get it. I understand. That is a delusion that people are not being prosecuted.
They aren't prosecuting.
Okay.
They aren't doing their job.
I got you. Yes, yes, yes. I know what the talking points are. Even when they show you the same video over and over again of the guy that didn't go to prison, but he did go to prison.
Here's the reality, Chuck.
Sure.
The guy in San Francisco, the DA, was just removed for not doing his job.
Yep.
And the same thing's going to happen in L.A.
Okay. Lovely. The guy who they show as the example, who they keep showing, though, actually went to jail. And a lot of people have gone to jail for the shoplifting where they said they legalized shoplifting and all that. There's still people being prosecuted and going to jail.
Yeah. Dude, we're two years beyond shoplifting. Are you crazy?
I'm not crazy. Okay. Whatever you say, Jimmy James. My point is, I was talking about the guy that they keep showing in San Francisco with the garbage bag, the one guy that they keep showing on video and all that. I'm talking about that guy in particular. He went to jail, whether you know it or not.
I don't care about it. I can show you a video from yesterday where they killed a guy for his tennis shoes in New York City. I could show you another video where they beat an old lady to death for funsies. And they were all supposed to be in jail, Chuck.
Yeah, okay.
What happened?
Yeah, what did happen? Exactly. But there is a mixed result here where you do have people that are not being prosecuted at all, and you have other people that are being unfairly prosecuted constantly, and it's got nothing to do with the politics. It's got to do with whatever these guys feel as though there is their primary thing to do in their area, because some of these prosecutors run their areas like it's their own private fiefdom. Okay?
Well, that's all.
I get it.
Problem.
How is it that all the prosecutors that happen to be supported by Soros seem to have this anything goes attitude?
See, again, now I got another thing to unpack. How many prosecutors are directly being supported by Soros? How many of them do you think?
Well, Chuck, that's interesting to ask.
Let me guess. All the Democrats.
There's only about 20 major cities.
There's only 20 major cities.
Right.
Did you just say that?
And about the first 10 of them are about the most hellish and miserable. So, Democrat cities. So all of them, Chuck.
Uh-huh. So just for starters, you don't think
19 out of 20.
Right. This is why I can't even ask a question about what you're saying, because what you're telling me is of the 50 states, each state doesn't have a major city. Is that what you're saying to me, or no?
Hold on. Time out.
I'm telling you that there's 20 metropolitan cities, which means over 500,000 people, Chuck.
Okay, I'm not getting into the dispute about the count of the people because I don't have those numbers in front of me. I'm just asking you if there's a major city in every state or not. Because you said major city at first.
There is not.
Okay, so let's qualify the cities you're talking about. First of all, are you talking about when they get to a certain population level or what?
Yes, there's a major city in every state. That's where they have their state.
BP, I'm asking him what about his statements. I believe that he's way undercounting a lot of things here and not looking at all of it. And that's what I'm getting to. Is he saying there's 20 major cities, which means we don't have enough to put one in every...
And you're wrong, BP. Like West Virginia, the biggest city would be probably Charleston, and it's tiny.
Okay. I'm trying to get at what he's saying here, because he's saying there's only 20 major cities. So if there's only 20, I want to figure out which 20 they are.
Oh, God damn it. Don't misquote me. I'm telling you what
I'm misquoting you.
Say. The statistics say in order to be a metropolitan city, you need to have over 500,000 residents. There's 20 of them.
Okay,
there's 10 major ones. There are millions of people. Out of them, they are all hellish, socialist, democratic crapples.
You see why I'm stopping here? Because he's telling me I'm misquoting him. I could have swore he said there are only 20 major cities. So I said, okay, let's figure out what those are. Now he's giving me a qualifier based on population. That's all I was trying to get to. And you see where we're gone?
For the third time.
Yeah, for the third time. I get it now because you actually said it. You see what I mean?
Why are you hung up on the cities? What you want names? Okay, here's some names. New York, crap hole. Chicago, crap hole. L.A., crap hole. Right. San Fran, right. Crap hole. Chicago, crap hole.
The reason
Miami,
he hung up on the
crap hole.
The city. You brought them up. He was simply asking for a clarification on the cities. That's why he asked about the cities.
That's why.
It just,
I told you.
This is
major metropolitan. Should be
bring up.
What can I tell you? You should learn from grade school what a metropolitan city is.
I'm sorry. My mistake. Okay. My mistake. Did he hang up?
I have no earthly idea.
No,
maybe
he
did.
Oh, no. I thought you hung up. I heard a noise. Sorry.
No.
Go ahead.
I didn't have nothing to say. I hit pause. I was listening to your reply.
Okay, fair enough. I was just trying to figure it out, what he was saying. And now he's listing them, and he's also giving me a qualifier for exactly what he means about the most populated cities in the country. And he's saying among the top of those, the 20, this is where he's going. This is what we see. Okay, fine. A lot of other things happen outside of those cities. But anyway, I was talking about the prosecutors across the country, not just in the cities.
I just put a link in the room that my NBC 15 did an actual story on it, that Soros prosecutors represent 1 in 5 Americans and preside over 40 of the nation's highest murder rates. Mm-hmm. It's an article can go read and how much influence he's got, but you know, he does have influence on the judicial system, major cities.
Sounds like he doesn't have much influence in Idaho, does it, BP?
A quick question that somebody asked in the chat room, Jimmy James, and we do have another caller, which I would like to allow to get on before we're done, but just a quick question. And it was, they asked in the chat room, have you ever been to any of these 20 cities, any of the major cities that you're talking about? Have you ever been there, any of them?
I was in the Navy. I've been in almost every state and every major city in the country. I've been around the world several times.
Fair enough.
Deployments. I've been on most continents.
Okay.
But thank you, young man, in the chat room.
I was just relaying the question. I was curious too. I thought that
here's my question to the guy in the chat room: has he ever left the city he lives in his life anywhere at all for any extended time?
I don't know.
Just been in the basic first few blocks.
Well, let me see here. I'll roll back to see who that was that actually asked the question, and maybe we'll get an answer. And they'll be listening. So go ahead. Yeah, let us know if you've been to any outside of the place where you live, I guess, because I'm not even assuming he lives in a city. But anyway.
Well, anyone stupid enough to ask a question like that must live in a city.
Okay. Fair enough. These are Jimmy James statements. That's all I'm saying to you. Don't necessarily believe your IQ is directly related to your location, me personally, but I could be very, very wrong. So,
Jimmy James thinks that your education and your lot of things are direct due to your culture in the city. So,
well, sure they are.
This is Jimmy James speaking.
Sure they are. Nope. Hey, and sure they are. And your zip code will much, much more determine your access to things like education than a lot of other factors. Your zip code and your bank account are basically the two biggest factors, as far as I'm concerned, as far as your access to education goes. However, I would say that intelligence may vary, and it may have nothing to do with your location, except in the places where you're drinking, you know, I don't know, poison water that, you know, does damage to people cognitively. Anyways, so with all of that in mind, is BP, should we go to the call? I mean, you're in control of this hour, believe it or not, this portion. So
that's nice to me.
Yeah. You want to go to the caller, or you want to go follow up with Jimmy James? Whatever you want to do, brother.
Hang on the caller. Let's see what they got. We don't have much time left.
All right. Fair enough. And generally speaking, we got... I could probably go about another 12 minutes or so. I have not heard from Aaron, so I'm not sure if the Age of Transitions is coming in. So we'll find out, and we're going to go a little bit past the hour. So with that, let's take a call from a non-major city up in the Northeast. And I know that that's factually who we're speaking to is not in that area. They're not in Boston, let's say. I think that's one of those cities. I think it qualifies as one of the 20. Anyways, but he's not in Boston. He's in the same state, though. How you doing, Chris?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Yeah. Not a lot, I guess. What's up with you? New caller gets the priority. B. Pete, you're in control.
Yeah, no, I just sitting here listening. And B. Pete, what's on your mind?
I have nothing on my mind now. I'm still trying to think three arguments back.
All right. So just going to ask what everyone's favorite Family Matters episode was.
Why not? Wait, which was that the show with Urkel? Was that show?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, right. I'm vaguely familiar, so. Okay, sorry. That's my Urkel's whole comment on it. Go ahead.
Is Urkel still alive?
I don't know.
Yeah, he actually just, he had a picture with Snoop Dogg. He's selling weed now. I'm not even kidding.
Urkel's.
So, wait, Urkel is now in the legitimate cannabis industry?
He said he would never dress up like Urkel ever again, but then he got a deal to sell some marijuana with a Snoop Dogg, and he's putting the glasses back on.
So he's willing to dress up as Urkel to sell weed.
Yeah.
You know, much like Freeway Ricky Ross now is in the legitimate cannabis business. So Freeway Ricky Ross, Snoop, yes, he is, and doing well. Freeway Ricky Ross, I just talked to him not too long ago, not on air, but anyway. Freeway Ricky Ross.
I thought of a time when Joy Reid ran down non-public figures. She said those people on horses were whipping blacks. They showed that was all horse crap. So there's an example. Okay, sorry. Bye. Back to it.
No problem, but just a quick question of consideration for you. That's somebody getting captured in a photograph over a news story. I guess that would be somebody being dragged into it. Now, if she went after them specifically and started saying that they were targets who needed to be acted against, then yeah, you have a problem there, especially if she was doing it under false pretenses.
She called them racist, so she destroyed their careers. They'll never be able to work anywhere else.
Well, that's a mild thing.
So did the idiot president.
Okay, so she characterized them in an ugly way, and that indirectly destroyed their career. Is that, yeah?
Well, she maliciously maligned them on air.
Okay.
Stated lies as fact, demonstrably. And there was an investigation which completely absolved them, which none of them mentioned, of course. Of course, it was just reins, horse reins.
Uh-huh. Well, then there would have to be an investigation to see if she did that under malicious intent. And if so, it seems as though that would be something, where if they wanted to sue her and get damages.
No, see, here's where we would both be wrong. Well, what we didn't think of. See, Fetzer Reed, same problem. You have to prove that they knew they were lying and maliciousness, see?
Well, no, you don't have to necessarily know you're lying if you're encouraging people to go after somebody. See, that's the thing. If you're encouraging people to go after somebody, it's clearly malicious. But if you're simply characterizing somebody, I guess that's another thing to decide as to whether that's, you know. Anyway, I don't know. That's an interesting thing there. And something that we should probably expand upon if we wanted to discuss the issue of exactly what is it that you could do damage-wise with your free speech, right? If you do damage to somebody and it's...
I think we should have a show on the free speech. I say okay. Words can't hurt anyone, never hurt anyone. And...
Well, in that way, there would be a lot of people who could have their cases reexamined, because a lot of things where you make statements and you direct somebody in a general way to go do something, a lot of times that is prosecuted because you're part of a conspiracy because you encouraged a criminal act, right? And that's, you know,
sure,
again...
But You have to prove that, which has never been possible before until the recent string of Republicans.
Well, it's no, that's not right, that it's never been possible before. They have proven many times in a court, according to the courts, that, and this is previous to this era, that plenty of people have encouraged crimes one way or another. For instance, if you even think back... From a Hollywood point of view.
And newscasters have been arrested, lawyers.
I didn't say any of that. No. Didn't say any of that. What I'm saying is that other people have been prosecuted for encouraging criminal acts with their speech, is what I'm saying. And if you think back to even that that case where that woman was raped and it became a movie and all that, right? Remember that there were guys prosecuted for kind of just cheerleading and encouraging the others to commit the rape. So what I'm saying is that there is legal precedence and there are cases, many, in the past where people have encouraged others to commit crimes.
That one was overturned, by the way.
Couldn't the Manson trial be a part of that?
Well, there you go. Manson, what? Did he actually do anything? No, he encouraged people.
No, I don't even think he did that.
Well, okay, I question that as well.
I know, but I'm saying in terms of the legal aspect,
as
didn't
it stands,
they say that was he was at fault.
As it stands, he spent the rest of his life.
He spent
the rest of his life in prison based on the idea that he had encouraged a crime, not that he had committed the murder, but that he had encouraged the murders. Right.
Even though he didn't know about them until after they happened.
Well, look, you and I could dissect
he
that and go,
swearing.
Yes, I understand, and believe it or not, you and I might agree on this entirely, but the premise by which he was prosecuted was that he encouraged his followers, his family, to do stuff, right? His people, and...
That's the only reason I cited it. I don't think he had anything to do with it, to be honest, but, I mean... Legally, they held him responsible for it, though.
Well, that's the only reason why I'm bringing it up, too, is because through his speech, whatever it might have been, he is said to have encouraged the criminal activities that led to the mass murders. I mean, a small scale, but it's still a mass murder because it's a collection of murders committed all at once, right? So, and two sets of them, one just being the LaBianco couple, and then, of course, all the guests at Sharon Tate's house. So, anyway... did you have something else? Well, we didn't even finish the Family Matters thing, did we, BP?
Yeah, that wasn't even a real serious thing. I just thought you guys are getting, like, really fiery and stuff.
Really?
So
I took that question as very serious, Chris. What's wrong with you? I mean, Urkel is a very serious guy. We should take Urkel very seriously.
Yes. I don't know. What 87 picked out was going to give you the plot summary, but okay.
Jimmy James, is Urkel a Republican or a Democrat? Do you know?
I have no idea. What Urkel is a smart person who's like Michael Jordan and said, Republicans buy tennis shoes too.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Smart guy,
Carlton on Fresh Prince, he was a Republican.
Listen, fair enough. Smart guy, Michael Jordan, but how smart is he all around? I really would not have revived that Hitler mustache like he did. I mean, just saying, that was kind of a bad move.
What?
Michael Jordan, he had like a Hitler mustache for a little while. You know, the little snippet under his nose?
Yeah. Charlie Chaplin.
He did that for a little while. Well, Charlie Chaplin too, but I mean, who do you think of first when you see just the little bit of hair under the nose?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. See, that ain't fair. Someone's eventually got to bring that back. I mean, can one guy really ruin a whole hair thing forever?
Well, see, here again might be a place where Jimmy James and I will never agree. I don't believe for a second that the Hitler mustache needs to be revived. But who knows what we might discuss next time on the Friday Night Open Mic. I want to thank Jimmy James for calling in, Chris Graves for calling in, and of course, you guys for listening, and especially my co-host, BP, who didn't get to control his time, but we'll fix that next week, BP, I promise, okay? The Age of Transitions is coming up next, guys, I just found out, so stay tuned to Ocelli.com Radio, and enjoy your weekend. I am merely Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect.